Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is stand-up librarian Meredith Myers on behalf of the West Hollywood Book Fair happening October 2nd at the new West Hollywood Library Park. And you know what? Today is an incredible day for so many reasons. I almost didn't make it here because I was at the new library, the new West Hollywood Public Library, because today was my first day as an employee. And I won't get emotional right now, but I've been on this journey to be a librarian and to work in a library for several years now with my master's degree, and today was the day that it actually happened. So I'm very excited. It's not a librarian position, but it's a position with a library and working with an incredible staff. I'd like to say hello to Susan and Bryce and Oleg and Mike, all the incredible people at that library. And you know what? We're going to be at that library this Sunday, October 2nd, for this book fair, of which I'm performing at. But today, we are here to talk with a woman that I really do admire, especially after reading her book. I mean, she's styled everyone from, gosh, you know, Sandra Bullock to Brad Pitt to Sharon Tate to Anne Margaret. I'm talking about the legendary hairstylist to the stars, Carrie White, author of Uppercut, Highlights of My Hollywood Life. Thank you so much, Carrie, for being with us today.
It is my absolute pleasure. I couldn't be more excited.
Gosh, I mean, this book, I've read it over the past 2 days, and I just can't put it down. It's unbelievable. And from what I've heard, I'm just on reading online as well, you cut a numerous amount of pages from this thing, so there's probably still more to come.
Well, I wrote 1,246 pages that I gave to my beloved Michael Crichton. He wanted to see, let me see what you've written here. And then it was like two reams of papers. He was just like, oh, he called it the enormity. I said, well, you know, they like big books these days, I thought. You know, Harry Potter, Carrie Potter, Shantaram. I mean, that's not... Anyway, we laughed, and he said, you need to cut two-thirds. And I choked and giggled and said, I thought you said cut two-thirds. He said, I did.
So I think it's funny that you're a hairdresser cutting hair, and here you're having to cut your own book. I think that's pretty funny.
That's what I do best, right? I cut. And yes, I have another book in 2.5 seconds called Snippets, Everything I Forgot to Tell You in the First Book.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this book is just an incredible journey of just you as a child. I think it opens up with you serving your first drink at 6 years old. And then from going there, and you change your name. Let's start off with that, because Carrie White is not your real name. Your real name is Carol, is that correct?
Yes, with an E on the end.
With an E on the end. And then you
remember,
so,
that was the joke in the book. My mother's, I wanted to change my name, and my mother was so upset. She said, I was named after Carol Lombard. She says, you have an E on the end of your name. I said, Mom, when they say Carol in the class and five girls raise their hand, they don't say Carol with the E on the end. So I
think it's funny that Carrie White, out of all names, I mean, do you get people saying, the Stephen King reference all the time?
White was my second husband's name. It's a real name for me.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Bucky White. So why I got Carrie White. So it happened. It was a legal name. I was here before the film Carrie, and actually Stephen King used to come into my salon, and my hairdresser Vern Pingator used to cut his hair. And when I met Sissy Spacek, she said, "At last, I meet the real Carrie White." So, and Nancy Allen was a client of mine for a long time. Yes, I'm the first Carrie White. So that's kind
the
of
first Carrie White, folks. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Now, when did you decide to become a hairdresser? Was it when you got your first beehive? I read about that. That was pretty funny at page 56. You getting your first beehive.
Thank you. I was going to be an actress, of course. And you go to Hollywood High, and you're going to be an actress. It's like the silent code. And everybody was going to college. I thought, oh, I'll go where you go. And then they said, well, what'd you get on your, what was your GPA? What'd you get on your GPA? I said, I don't think I took GPA. And so I had to realize that I had no academic structure prepared for college. And I was lucky to discover beauty school. And I thought, this is a way I could book and take off for my auditions for theater, you know, or movies or TV or whatever, and I got very popular very quickly doing hair, and it was like I told my best friend Stephanie Powers, who I'll be on the panel with
this Sunday. Yes,
and I said, Steph, you get famous, I'll get famous, I can do your hair, and I don't have to look good in the morning, I get to write my own script, and that was kind of how it all took off.
Now, talk about, like, the field, because, you know, back when you started, you know, it was a male-dominated field. I mean, you had people like John Peters and Vidal Sassoon. I recently saw his documentary that was out, and then George Masters. And I mean, how was that as a woman trying to make your way in this field?
First of all, I really feel I was pretty clear. John Peters came after me. He's generation behind me. He was a student when I was coming in. He's about 5 years behind me, I guess, or something like that. And his uncle were the Pagano brothers. It was an all-male field. Gene Jacob was clearly there. George Masters and Richard Alcala, who I married 10 years later, and Vidal Sassoon, who I met at Gene Chico's salon, who Vidal eventually took over Gene's store on Rodeo. Vidal wrote a beautiful quote for me on my book, if you'll notice on the back.
Mm-hmm.
He's my hero and my king, and he was revolutionary in the field of hairdressing. But yes, it was just starting to be the Romeo with the scissors. The males were just starting to, the straight guys getting into all the ladies' hair, you know, and so more than hair was going on with these people. And I thought, how I could see all this happening. I was like a kid. I was like 19, and these people were all like 10 years older than me, and I was like, how am I going to get in here? I guess I'll just have to be really good. That's all I can figure out. Because I wasn't going to go home and sleep with them and whatever was going on. So it was crazy, and it was fun, and I just kind of carved a niche for myself being a girl. I started to get recognition as the first lady, as the only girl, you know, in this field. And write-ups started happening for me with Kenneth, Mr. Kenneth, and write-ups with other hairdressers that were male. And then here was this little Carrie White riding her moped to work and had a store right off Rodeo. I was just barely 21 when I was on To Tell the Truth. Will the real Carrie White please stand up? Because nobody could believe it. So that was great.
I think as any woman does, we want to know kind of the inside scoop of a hair salon. And I love just listening to you talk about your giving your first haircut and combing through like the steel wool. And then my favorite part, honestly, this whole book was just on page 24 when you're talking when talking about that's my specialty, and that when a client comes in, I believe it's quoted, Al taught me, whatever they ask for, if they want turquoise stripes with pink circles, you tell them, yes, that's my specialty. And then you have this hilarious story about bleach and not forgetting the bleach. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, God, wasn't that a riot? You really learn how to do hair after you're out of beauty school. It's funny. You know, you learn how to pass the test, somewhat what's going on in schools today. And then you really learn it when you're really working on people. And so when this lady came in and my boss was kind of starting to actually party too much and not show up, and then I would be there, and it was good for me. That's kind of how I built my career with the other missing hairdressers. And so Ketty Frings was like this phenomenal woman who had all these credits, and her husband was a famous, you know, Kurt Frings was a famous agent. I thought, wow. And she was my first client to go to this super big restaurant, Scandi. I don't even know what would be like recognized as Scandia today. Because it's just so different today. And that's really why I wanted to write my book, a little interjection. I did want to tell about these times that were then, and not everything's so homogenized today. But anyway, so Kitty comes in, and she says something to me that I'd never heard of, and I was just looking for clues. Oh, do you do the Paris highlights with bleach and tinfoil, and thought, okay, bleach, tinfoil. That's all I knew. And I had no idea what, you know. And Paris, let me interject this also. Only the elite could travel. There were no credit cards. So the local person was not going to Paris. I'd pull on Betsy Bloomingdale's sleeve, what's it like in Paris? Because you couldn't charge a flight, pay you later, mm-hmm. you know. And you'd say, we didn't know. There weren't the papers. There weren't all this global insight that there is today. So she says, Paris. I go, oh, Paris, okay. and then she says, with tinfoil. So I do all this tinfoil. I know what highlights. This was from the time when we would take a crochet needle out of a rubber cap and pull hair and put the bleach all on the head and let it sit. And it was very painful and very tedious for all these ladies. So this was wrapping the hair in tinfoil. So I wrapped it all very carefully. And she was like, when are you going to put the bleach in? And I'm like, oh, I like to do that after. I mean, I just kept jumping on myself and you go, oh, okay, well, that's odd, but okay. And she was reading her scripts and papers and not looking. And then it was so late, she was rushing me then. And so the bleach didn't get to stay long enough. And then it was orange and the bleach spilled and she looked like a leopard and it was all spotted. And I dimmed the light, stood in front of her. And she was dashing now to get to Scandia. And, oh, God, it was just a nightmare. I was just...
But you said at the beginning, you said that you think probably a lot of people out there do this with clients, where it's like the client comes in and requests something. And do you think that's still happening today? Because now I'm a little fearful of my hair.
You know, there's so many good hairdressers, and we're so full of product tools and information and all the seminars and all the beauty shows. And this was not the exposure or the progress. There would not be a Beyonce mm-hmm. or a Rihanna or any of this kind of incredible hair going on that is happening today in those days. I was actually the first, I want to say white girl, probably the first white person ever written up in Jet magazine because I had a black clientele because hair didn't scare me. You know, mm-hmm. it wasn't like, oh, I can't do black hair. It was not even an idea. I just thought, okay, it's hair. I can do it. And I was doing Camille Cosby. I was doing Mrs. Mm-hmm. Nat King Cole, Natalie's mother, and I was doing Roberta.
Well, you have a story
Flack.
About Roberta Flack. I was on her PR team several years ago, so you were talking about giving her a yes. ride home. I ate sushi with her on 48 Hours TV show.
Isn't she glorious? I love
she
her.
She is terrific. I adore her. Yes. I really do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Ray Charles.
The afro. Oh, pardon me. Say that again, darling.
Oh, I just made a comment about Ray Charles being in that story as well. I mean, you've worked with just incredible people. I'm actually a huge fan of Lucille Ball, so I loved the part about Lucille Ball on page 185. Where she says, as for my hair, do what you want as long as this goes here. Lucy motions for the sides of her hair to go up. And then the bangs go like this. She pinched in the wave and scooted in her. Like, basically what happened there was Lucy wants the same hairstyle but just doesn't think she wants it.
Yeah. She just wants to say she went to Carrie White. There was a funny thing that went on in Facebook recently, and it was like, if you lived in Beverly Hills in the 60s, and then everybody would chime in, you went to Blum's, or you did this, or you did that, and then one of them was, if you lived in Beverly Hills in the 60s, your mother went to Carrie White.
Yeah.
So I laughed with that. Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy times. And I heard not too long ago, I ran into a lady that used to come to me. She said she used to go do her hair. She used to have her hair done before she came into my salon because it was so intimidating.
Oh,
can
my
you imagine?
Gosh.
Warren Beatty would be there. Joan Collins would be there. Natalie Wood would be there. It was just, you know, Elvis came in and would shout up, hey, Carrie. And then people would, like, fly out of the shampoo bowls to get a load of Elvis. And, you know, it was such a phenomenal time. Like I say, there weren't that many good hairdressers as there are today, and they're very compartmentalized and very specific today. You have agencies for hair, agencies for makeup, where they say, where someone comes into town, I need red carpet hair, and there's hairdressers, they just run and do red carpet hair. You know, this
yes.
is, I did everything. I did Diane Cannon's makeup for her film Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. That's when I first was doing Diane. I've done everybody's hair on your panel that I'm going to be on.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'll be emceeing that stage, and if you'd like to do my hair, I would be happy for you to do it. My hairdresser's going, what are you doing, Meredith? But no,
how good a book is this for your hairdresser? Won't your hairdresser love my book?
She sure will, and I'm going to make sure she gets a copy. Absolutely. Irene, you're getting one. There's just incredible people in this book. I mean, there is a journey that you're going on, though, with all this success
yes.
and all these huge celebrities that
yes.
you're working with. You had an incident with Jimi Hendrix on page 173 that you say, I had barely smoked marijuana, let alone tried LSD. He was smoking something from a pipe made of a small metal film can. He passed it to me. Your lips here, Jimmy said, and pointed to a tiny hole. There was a brown rock on the other edge. Don't drop the hash. So basically, from Jimi Hendrix, then you went on this journey into drugs and alcohol. Can you talk a little bit about that and coming
well,
out on the other side?
Well, I was clearly already on my journey to drugs and alcohol. I mean, junior high was all about Southern Comfort and slow gin and, you know, beer and smoking and my mother's bourbon and 7-Up. And, you know, I even would be like, oh, I have a cold. I like that cherry cough syrup. You know, I was clearly on this little progressive road that, you know, blows up to the moon. But, yes, that was my first introduction to hash. And I could just, you know, it was just developing. And if in those days, LSD was all very experimental and not harmful, and it wasn't like how it had progressed to where you see the billboards of, you know, welcome to the glamorous world of cocaine, and it'd be a scene of a morgue and tags hanging on toes. You know, I mean, in the beginning, it was just, you know, free love and la-di-da, and, well, you know, more is better. No one was carrying a bottle of water in their purse, you know, in the 60s or 70s, it was like water. I don't even want ice cubes in my drink that dilutes, you know. It was like we were just all about the party. And my particular, I believe, predisposition for it was different than, you know, my drink affected me a little differently than it did other people. I really, you know, had a love affair with it. I had a relationship with it that was not like other people's. That were just there's people that have done cocaine that aren't cocaine addicts. You know, it was important to me. What I wanted.
But your
to
friend,
say,
your friend Stephanie Powers, actually, you talk about her a lot. She was one of the key people that kind of really helped bring you out of that. There's a lot of talk in there, and that's right.
She has no problem. She's not in any form a drug addict. She's not an alcoholic at all. And so for someone like Stephanie to see her friend disintegrating, you know, it's just hard for her to understand. But what people don't understand is what they don't see, you know, behind the doors and how this goes on. I wanted to say one other little point, Meredith, sweetheart, was that what I originally wanted was to write this book to hairdressers, kind of to talk about when I was new and I'd hear all these stories of these other hairdressers of George Masters and everything. Now here I am in 68 and now I feel I'm at the top of the food chain here with this, and I wanted to talk to all the new hairdressers coming in and what it was like in the history of hair. And then my book just got bigger than me, and it's like it started writing itself. And if you are writing about rock and roll, your life was in rock and roll, and that was it. If you were in politics and you're writing about your life, it was just all focused on politics. And if you were in the film business, it was all about that industry. When you're a hairdresser, you have the diversity to have, I mean, I was doing, I had Iggy Pop in my salon and Nancy Reagan. You know, I had people that would never be at the same party, you know, were at my party, I like to say. So that was another thing that got explosive about that. So just to...
Well, I think it's interesting, the book, I did publicity for 10 years, so I think it's a similar career where you're working with all different types of people, and then there's also a thin line between professional and personal life, you know, because you're kind of doing a job, which you're cutting hair or making people famous or whatever, but then at the same time, you're getting to know these people personally, and you're in their lives, so there's obviously going to be drama and stories, and I mean, I'm writing a book about my own experiences, and that's where I really enjoyed yours so much, because you do touch on hair as a business as well. It's not just everybody out there. There's fantastic stories with all these amazing people. Definitely purchase it, please. But, you know, there's also topics about hair as a business. I mean, I love the part on page 200 when you're talking about, you know, you're trying to run your salon and then people are stealing from the salon. And, you know, a lot of times I see that occasionally happening, you know, and then editorials, having been a publicist so many times, you know, you're doing stuff for free. Sometimes you're not being paid so much because you're trying to, again, get your name out there, you know. But I think that's what's great about this book, Carrie. You've really touched on so many things. But since your book is speaking to young people out there that maybe want to be hairdressers or whatnot, what advice can you give some of these people out there about what it's like, what the business is?
Well, I have always been, there is no competition. I just compete with myself. There's 5 beauty salons have moved on the 2 blocks where my salon is now in Beverly Hills. And people say, oh, my God, another beauty salon. Oh, look in the beauty salon 2 doors down. I'm like, I don't care. They have nothing to do with me. There's more heads than there are hairdressers. My job is to be the best hairdresser I can be. See, and so if people just look at themselves and do their very best job, hair follows. I never look at my books and say, ooh, how much money am I going to make today? I get to see... Oh, good, Sally's coming in, Meredith's coming in. Oh, good, I get to meet Joe's friend, Harry's coming in, you know. And I've just always just thought of my own, not competing with other people, but just doing my best. And how can I make this haircut better than the one I made last month, you know. And I think that is really, keep your eyes on yourself and do your best. Don't worry about everybody else. You just do your very best. Stay current. That's very important. You know, who wants to go to a hairdresser that really would be still in spandex pants and roller skates today? Well, it might be fun, but...
And hey, let's speak about hairstyles today, because honestly, I feel like you touched on it a little bit in the book and maybe in another interview, but I just honestly feel like so many people are looking the same. I feel like people don't want to step out of the box and be themselves and be unique, and that's what I mean. I kind of feel like I see this hairstyle everywhere where it's kind of parted in the center, it's straight, and then it's just got these curls. I mean, what are your opinions on that hair today?
You know, the hair extension, especially for older ladies, sometimes I feel like, you know, if your hair can't grow that long, you don't get to have it. I don't want to see it too much. Now, there are some people that have long hair, and it's fine or thinner, and you can plump it up. But, you know, some of this stuff, like everybody looking like they just got off the beach in Tahiti, it's like ridiculous. And that's fine for the, you know, younger kids or for a film, or change it up. But the thing that's really important is that you consider what kind of hair you have, you know? It's like if you have very strong, straight Asian hair, you shouldn't be trying to have some short little curly do. I mean, to some degree, any more than someone with short, fine, curly hair should try to have, you know, a thick, straight bob. You know, it's just have some reality about your hair. I'm all for changing. I love the hair, like changing, but I think it's always a variation on a theme. You, what's good for you? What flatters your face? what kind of hair do you have? Are you trying to make your hair so be something else that it isn't? I believe that our hair is perfect for who we are with its color. You can enhance, you can change, but really take a look at yourself. What works for you? Just to be, I think everybody can be every color. Within those colors, there are shades. Mm-hmm. Also, by the way,
I'm a redhead. I'm a natural redhead, and I'm just annoyed by how many people are trying to be redheads today. Because it's like that's the only thing I can be, because I'm crazy and fabulous, and that's what a redhead is. But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to try to be a platinum blonde when I can't afford the upkeep. But I feel like so many people are trying to be redheads, and I'm just like, well, you kind of can tell.
It's the hardest color to make. It's so hard, redheads. It's very difficult because it fades and changes within the month by the time. And it's almost more difficult than blondes spend their life looking for the right shade of blonde. But even if you're a redhead, I think there's variations. I've never met you, but I would say, what I like about hair is that there are seasons to hair as well as there are to the year. And in the summer, I would say, you know, throw in some light golden red. And in the winter, in the fall, I would throw in some darker auburn, you know, highlights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just play with it. You know, hair is, I always feel it's the one thing, you know, we got that we can really fool around with. It grows back and we get a reprieve all the time.
Okay, here's a question everybody wants the answer to, and I know that so do people, you know, on the business end of things. What should people be tipping their hairstylists or the people? I mean, what's the thing that's going to make you happy?
Oh, just give me your credit card and just
take it. Fantastic. No, I've been a server many times, so I always feel like it's important to know what to tip people because, you know, everybody's providing a service. And, you know, I went to Bumble and Bumble in New York one time, and it was the first time I was in, like, a factory of hairdressing. And I was like, wow, uh-huh. There's the person doing the drying of the hair, the person washing the hair, the massaging of the hair. There's all these people.
Spray
so
on
I was
aisle
curious.
Three.
Yes, exactly.
Well, here's what I say. I put myself through beauty school, as you know, working at Bob's Big Boy. I survived off my tips, you know. I think tips are important. When I'm feeling a lack or pressure or squeezed myself, like financially, I like to tip double to the guy that's washing my car or doing something, because I always feel it's a tithing to the universe that I'm going to get a dollar faster than this guy might. So, but believe in the abundance. You know, there's plenty to go around. I think everybody should tip whatever's comfortable. I know people, some people are, you know, they're very squeezy with their tips. And so who cares? You know, for me, people make up for it. I have people that are overly generous, and God, it's really great because it helps me. I'm a mother of five. I've got 10 grandchildren. Yeah, I have a salon. They say you don't tip the owner. Well, fine, don't tip the owner. But I feel like I got more expenses than when I was, you know, working for someone, but that doesn't mm-hmm. matter. I don't care. The tip comes from your heart and your place. And I know people that are thrilled with their haircut and wish they could tip more, and that's fine too. I don't really put a rule on it. I always tip, like in a restaurant, a minimum of 20%. I think that's just kind of how it goes today. But people can do whatever they're comfortable with. It's not my criteria of who you are, how much you love your hair, or what you don't, you know, whatever. You know,
and you are still working. I mean, you're not just an author. You still have your shop in Beverly Hills called Carrie White Hair.
I am. I just put my name out front. I've had my salon for almost 7 years, and I didn't put my name out front because I didn't want breaks to screech when they saw, oh, my God, Carrie White. Is that her salon? Is she still alive?
I'm sure you have an appointment book that's just completely full. Maybe I should make my appointment now for 3 months from now. You're probably booked up.
I am really, yes, I'm very booked up, but I promise you, Meredith, I did not write this book to do more hair. I want to get off my feet to a degree, and I would like to just come in once a month like a guest star at my salon and do whoever that I needed to do. It's very demanding, and you know, I give so much. I love people. This is not the business to be in if you don't like people. And I'm an artist first. I'm an art major. I had a scholarship to Chouinard's and Art Center. So, I give 200% to everything that I do. But it can be so draining, and that's not why I wrote this book as a hair book. It's really a life book, a history of hair, yes, but also of this town. And the bottom line and the thread, I believe, of my book is life is worth living. Take care.
And you know what? That's the perfect way to end this interview. I'm going to plug a couple things because Carrie is actually going to be appearing at the West Hollywood Book Fair, and that's the reason we're here today. And she's going to be in the That's Entertainment Pavilion, of which I am the MC of. And she is going to be on the panel Take One, Colorful Lives of Wonderful Women on and Off Screen. And she's going to be there with Diane Cannon, Florence Henderson, and, of course, her friend Stephanie Powers. And that's going to be from 11:45 to 12:45 with signings at 12:45. And, of course, any information on Carrie and this amazing book, which she's, you know, we didn't even get a chance to talk about it, but she'll talk about it on Sunday. I mean, she's done Louise Fletcher's Hair and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She's done Bette Midler's and The Rose. And, of course, Sharon Tate's Marriage to Roman Polanski. I mean, she's going to talk about all these amazing things. But any information on Carrie can be found at thecarriewhite.com. Please visit that. And, of course, I am Meredith Myers, stand-up librarian Meredith Myers. My website is standuplibrarian.com. I'll be on the theater stage at 5:30 on Sunday, but also spending some time with Carrie on that stage Sunday morning. Any information on the West Hollywood Book Fair is westhollywoodbookfair.org. Carrie White, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, sweetheart. Ditto on
and
the
I,
love.
Absolutely. And we'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday. Thank you so much.
Perfect.
And we'll talk to everybody later. See you Sunday at the book fair, October 2nd. This has been Meredith Myers.
Bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting to the odd pennies. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. That old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. At the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money, and I wonder what you